Chapter 8. This corner of the Shadowscape seemed even more dull and lifeless than the area surrounding Kristen's home, and a shiver ran through me. I resisted the urge to wrap my arms around myself, and instead, I kept my hand on my bandolier. While everything appeared to be clear, looks could be deceiving, and I didn't want to let my guard down until I knew my team and I were secure. The rest of my friends were gathered around, and even from where I stood, I could feel the magic that radiated from them as they prepared for an ambush. Brayden's hands were on the thick essence crystal belt strapped around him. Varlith's were on his weapon, and Gawain's flickered with fire magic. Orin had his large fists clenched, and Myrrh tried to imitate the Metalog's battle stance. Even Almasi had his chin raised and his shoulders squared as his eyes carefully looked around. We waited in stillness for a few minutes, and my heart beat like a drum inside my chest as I prepared myself for a herd of monsters to manifest in the field. Karth had a tendency to randomly show up with her mega-sized creatures, so I couldn't let my guard down until I was certain we were secure. Finally, I realized everything was tentatively okay, so I relaxed my stance, and my teammates did the same. "It doesn't look like she's here," I assessed, which I know is the obvious thing to deduce, but if she were going to make herself known, she would have done so by now. "So here's what we need to do. We need to survey the area and try to find the edges of the cloak. It's going to be difficult to locate, but it has to end at some point. We need to find the place where the magic ends and then figure out how to lift it."
"So, it is like a magic garment?"
Myrrh clarified with a frown.
"Am I understanding it?"
"Exactly," I said. "Think of it like a blanket of magic covering the area. We need to find where it starts and stops."
"Let's split up," Almasi suggested, and the Earthmage's eyes studied the empty blackened field. "Maybe a few of us can go on one side of the field, and the others can take the other side and try to determine a start and end. That way we don't exhaust ourselves walking back and forth."
"Good idea, Almasi," I complimented the pilot, and he flashed me a toothy grin. "I'll take the far end, and Gawain and Varlith can come with me. Orin, Almasi, Brayden, and Myrrh, you take the other side?"
"Sounds good to me,"
Brayden nodded. "Now, all of you, keep your ears and eyes peeled," I advised the team. "Things seem secure, but we don't know how the cloak works, and the last thing we need is for someone to get hurt before we figure that out."
"I guess if someone gets hurt, we figured at least one thing out,"
Orin smirked, and I shook my head as I stifled a laugh. The Metalog always knew how to bring a smile to my face, even in the most serious of situations.
"I volunteer Orin as the one to get zapped,"
Almasi proposed, and we all cracked up as Orin stuck his tongue out like a child.
"Okay, everyone focus," I insisted through my laughter. "No one's getting zapped on my watch, not even Orin. Now, if you happen to notice a particular feeling, be it mental or physical, call it out. I don't know how this magic is going to feel, so your suggestions are just as good as any."
"Noted,"
Gawain agreed, and the fire mage held up his hand. A small fireball suddenly appeared in his palm, and for a moment, I was amazed by the readiness of his flames. I'd gained a new appreciation for the element after wielding it the other day, as well as finding out that my own mother was a fire mage, and the sight of Gawain handling it with ease was awesome.
"And break," I declared, and without further ado, my team split up to scour the area.
Varlith, Gawain, and I headed down the opposite side of the field, and I winced with every crunchy footstep I took across the earth. As we walked, I decided I didn't want to take any chances when it came to protection, so I retrieved the essence crystal of my bullet bass and smashed it in my palm. Once the metal-coated fish appeared, I absorbed its abilities within myself, and suddenly, my body was covered in silver armor. I admired the gleam of silver and flexed my muscles, and I smirked. Nothing was going to get through this. I was tempted to add a speed slug to my person, but
I knew it was important to inspect every square inch of this field. Then an idea crossed my mind. Why limit the armor to just myself when I could share the wealth and protect my friends as well? So I stopped in my tracks, closed my eyes, and visualized the rest of my teammates coated in the thick armor. I felt a tug at my mana, and when I opened my eyes, Gawain and Varlith had frozen in place, and the pair sported the same silver armor as me.
"Maybe give us a heads up next time, Griff,"
Varlith grimaced as he held his arms out in front of him.
"That definitely scared the shit out of me."
"My bad," I apologized to the banisher, but Varlith waved me off.
"It's fine," he assured me. "I'm definitely not going to complain about extra protection."
"Yes, thank you, Griff,"
Gawain agreed with the gypsy. With his aristocratic features, the armor made Gawain look like a valiant knight, and it definitely suited him. I turned my attention to the other side of the field where the rest of my team had also halted their steps. Each of the mages was coated in the bullet bass armor, and none seemed too concerned by it, except for Murr. I could hear the moose shapeshifter cry out in alarm, and he spun around to look at the metal that had coated his body like a second skin.
"Oh, Moose Boy is not looking too good over there,"
Gawain snorted as he observed the kid's panic attack.
"Yeah, I didn't stop to think he'd be a little freaked out by the magical armor suddenly appearing."
I winced, and I rubbed at the back of my neck. Luckily, the rest of my team was used to things like this, so I watched them all gather around Murr and reassure him. After a minute or so, Murr seemed to relax, and Dalmasi offered me a thumbs up from across the field. I let out a sigh of relief. Thank the Maker. I would apologize to Murr for it later, but at the same time, I wanted my team to be as safe as possible.
"I'll never stop being impressed by that magic,"
Varlith noted with a dark raised eyebrow.
"The ability to absorb your summon's powers is insane. A little freaky, of course, but still pretty damn awesome."
"Thanks, Varlith," I laughed. "Honestly, sometimes I'm still amazed I can do it. It certainly saved my ass more than once."
"That thing you did with the Barroka was even more impressive,"
Gawain said, and I detected a note of jealousy in the golden-haired mage's voice.
"Fire magic can be a bit difficult to control, but you wielded it like a natural."
"Hey, don't praise me too much. I had no clue what I was doing," I objected with a shake of my head. "But I will admit, something about using that type of magic felt good. I don't know how else to say it."
"I mean, your aunt mentioned your mother was a fire mage. I'm sure that has something to do with it."
Varlith shrugged. "I had the same thought," I agreed with the banisher. "I don't really know if that's how it works or if I'd just been swept up in the moment. There was a lot of adrenaline coursing through me."
"That would also make sense," the gypsy chuckled.
"Not to shift the subject, but I have to ask about Murr,"
Gawain brought up, and the fire mage winced as he stepped over a particularly crispy patch of blackened earth.
"I know he's a shapeshifter and all, but other than that, what magic does he possess? Or does he even have magic outside of that?"
"Come on, Maddox, be nice to the kid,"
Farlith groaned.
"He's not so bad.
I know this may come as a shock to you, Prost, but I don't mind the boy,"
Gawain insisted, and the fireball in his hands made his emerald green eyes flash.
"He seems like a kind lad. I just worry about how he's going to fare. This was a huge battle to send him into, and while I intend to make sure he's well protected, I worry about how this may affect him."
"Wow. Gawain, I never realized you could be so maternal," I smirked. "Look, I'm honestly not sure what kind of magic he wields outside of his shifting, but the kid has a big heart, and he wants to be a warrior. I gave him the option to stay behind in Mistral, but he insisted that he wanted to fight with the mages and join the academy. So I just figured this would be a good opportunity for him to see how things work."
"That's one hell of a lesson," Varlith snorted. "Can't say I envy him at all."
"Well, if you trust in him, Summoner, I will as well,
Gawain said as he glanced to the other side of the field.
I have to admire someone who came to a foreign land and insists on fighting for them. And who knows? Maybe a moose is precisely the secret weapon we needed all along.
I couldn't hold back a laugh at that. And soon, Varlith and Gawain joined me. The Fire Mage brought up valid concerns about Myr. But I had faith the boy would fill the warrior position just fine with time. And who knows? Maybe all we needed was a moose. As our stroll continued, we soon remembered the fact that the Shadowscape was seemingly never-ending, which made it difficult to assess how far we had to walk. Gawain, Varlith, and I remedied this by deciding to split up further, and each of us walked around slowly in an attempt to find an edge to the cloaking magic. With every step, I felt my enthusiasm wane. Without the gated graveyard, trees, or flower-studded paths, it was impossible to guess just where the castle would be. I kicked around the earth in an attempt to see if the scorched grass covered the blooms, but to nobody's surprise, there was nothing but blackened earth beneath my feet. However, it gave me an idea. I reached into my bandolier and retrieved the pale blue winged-shaped essence crystal of my Vinghund. I smashed it to the ground, and once the burst of smoke vanished from the air, my winged canine monster stood before me. "Hey there, pretty girl," I greeted the blue creature, and she let out a cheerful bark in response. I approached her and gave her an affectionate scratch behind the ears before I mounted her. "I need you to take me up a bit. I want to see if I can get an aerial view of the cloaking spell." The Vinghund let out another cheerful bark, and then she pumped her large blue wings in the air. Seconds later, we rose up into the air, and I kept an eye out for anything that appeared amiss. Gawain and Varlith looked up at me from their places in the field, and at first they went straight for their weapons, as if they thought we were under attack. But then they seemed to realize my intentions, and both gave me supportive thumbs up. As my Vinghund descended higher up, a chill ran down my spine. The Shadowscape was already freezing enough, but the added altitude only made it worse. An unnerving feeling spread through me as I got closer to look at the deep gray sky, and I forced myself to look away before the dread could creep any further. I was certainly ready to return home to Mistral and leave this sad, soulless place behind me. Once we reached an optimal height that allowed me to survey the field at a better vantage, I commanded the Vinghund to hover in place. But before I focused on the ground below, I made sure to study the sky to make sure my summons and I were alone up here. We'd been fortunate enough to keep shy of any stray monsters, but that luck could change at any moment, and I wouldn't put it against Karth to pull a surprise aerial attack. Luckily for us, the sky was mostly clear, so I returned to the task at hand. However, nothing looked amiss. The darkness suddenly made it difficult to spot anything, but I tried to focus nonetheless. Finally, a shimmer caught my eye. "Fly that way," I instructed my Vinghund, and the canine monster happily obliged. We flew to the right of where Gawain and Varlith were studying, and as we got closer, I noticed a thin silver line along the ground. Was that our cloak? I made note of the location, and then instructed my monster to fly us on to the other side. Now that we had one edge figured out, there had to be another, and maybe it was just beyond where my team stood. It was hard to determine the perimeters of the ground, but the view from above gave clarity to the problem. We flew over to where Brayden, Almasi, Myr, and Orin stood at the ready, and about 100 feet past them, we located another silver line.
"Guys, over here!"
I called down to my friends, but they didn't hear me, so I commanded the Vinghund to fly down lower. My teammates finally spotted me, and Brayden offered me a confused wave as I hovered closer to them. "I think I've found the lines of the magic," I explained, and my teammates' eyes widened.
"Really?"
Brayden asked.
"Wow, that was fast."
"I'm not entirely sure if it's the right edge, but I found a similar one on the other side, so that can't be a coincidence," I explained.
I figured the enchantment would only spread so far, but I wasn't certain it would have a distinct line. The big summoner nodded.
Sounds right to me. If you think it's something, lead us to it.
Raiden and the others followed me over to where the Vinghund and I had spotted the shimmer. But the summoner frowned when I pointed out the soft silver glimmer against the earth.
I don't see anything, he noted as he craned his neck around.
What? I frowned, and I blinked rapidly to make sure my eyes weren't trying to trick me.
What do you mean? It's right there.
I don't see anything,
Braden repeated, and my former roommate squinted his eyes as tightly as he could as he studied the area I'd gestured to.
What the fuck was going on?
The silver shimmer was there, plain as day. Why couldn't he see it?
Orin, Mer, Almasi, you see it, right?
I asked the other members of my team. And one by one, the mages and the moose came over to the spot. But just like Braden, they didn't seem to see it.
Griff, I can't see anything but blackened grass, Almasi reported. Which is really saying something because I'm able to see any abnormalities in the earth.
You can't see anything?
I asked, and a wave of confusion crashed over me. What the fuck was going on? How come I was the only one who could see the silver line?
Maybe I could try to feel for it, Almasi offered,
and the Earth Mage placed his hands on the ground and closed his eyes tightly. He kneeled down to get closer, and his eyebrows furrowed as he concentrated. While he did that, I looked to the others, but Mer and Orin simply shook their heads.
Sorry, Griff, Orin apologized. I don't see it either.
Me either,
Mer replied, and the moose shapeshifter's face was crestfallen. I could tell he was saddened by the fact that he couldn't see what I could, and I too shared in that sentiment. Suddenly, Almasi perked up.
There's something, but it's faint, he reported,
and his disappointed expression faded quickly as he straightened up.
I don't know what it is exactly, but there's a little bit of a hum that I didn't hear before. I probably just needed to focus.
Oh, thank the Maker. I was worried I was losing my mind.
I sighed in relief. If the Earth Mage could feel even a hint of the magic, there was hope for us yet.
Honestly, I was too, but there's definitely something going on here,
Almasi replied, and the Earth Mage closed his eyes again.
I'm going to try to connect with it. The Earth over here is so odd. It's like my magic doesn't know how to handle this specific environment.
Well, keep concentrating and try to see what you can do, I advised the Earth Mage.
What should the rest of us do?
Braden asked.
I know we can't see it or anything.
Hold tight, I instructed the ox-like summoner. I'm going over to the other side to fill in Gawain and Varlith. They don't have earth magic either, so I'm not sure they'll be able to see something, but maybe they'll have some ideas on how to make the magic more visible.
Sounds good,
Braden nodded.
Let us know if you need anything more.
Will do,
I nodded back, and then I commanded the Vinghund to fly back across the field. As my canine summons flew ahead, I studied the barren earth beneath us. And suddenly, I had another idea. What was the cloaking spell other than an illusion of sorts? So, I reached into my mind and called out to Fi. I sensed the white-winged Arkan stir, and a small yawn rang out inside my consciousness.
Well, well, well. It's about time, Master,
Fi drawled.
I was beginning to think you'd forgotten about me.
I could never forget about you, Fi, I chuckled. Actually, I'm in need of your assistance.
Ooh, fun,
the goddess declared in a happy voice.
How can I help?
Well, we've discovered that Karth put an enchantment over the area, I explained. You're the one who uses illusion magic. So I was wondering if you'd be able to help us break it.
That would explain why the castle disappeared,
Fi noted.
Okay. You'll need to summon me, of course. It's hard for me to deduce from all the way in here.
Fine, I agreed. But no funny business.
I swear,
the Arkin insisted.
Nothing funny. Just here to help. Karth can't hide from us any longer.
So I released my holds on the Arkin, and after her tattoos faded from my chest, the white-winged goddess appeared before me. My Vinghund was slightly startled by the sudden appearance, but she let out a satisfied bark when she realized who it was.
Hi, baby.
Fi greeted her former monster as she pumped her wings in place. Then she hovered beside the canine summons and scratched her behind her ears. The Vinghund cooed at the affection, and the sight was sort of touching. Okay, can you see the silver lines on either side of the field? I inquired. The Arkin gave the pale blue monster a kiss on the snout, and then surveyed the area with narrowed red eyes.
I can see something,
she confirmed.
I might be able to see it better if I went up higher.
The goddess pumped her white-feathered wings in the air and ascended higher, and I watched her crane her neck around the field for a bit until she broke out into a grin.
Oh yeah, that's a cloaking spell, all right,
Fi called down to me.
A fairly good one, but not better than what I could have made.
How do we get rid of it? I asked. Fi tilted her head to the side, and her long white hair spilled over her shoulder.
I have an idea, but it's likely going to require all of us.
As in the other Arkans? I clarified. The white-winged goddess nodded.
It's a tricky spell, but I think I can break it, as long as I have a little assistance.
Then let's do it, I agreed. I was ready to rip this veil apart and finally get after Karth.
You should advise your friends to step back,
Fi suggested as she looked down at my teammates below us.
There's a possibility this could get messy, and I don't think you want them to get hurt.
I definitely don't, I said before I commanded my Vinghund to fly over to Varlith and Gawain, and the pair of mages eyed me with concern as we approached them.
Griff, what's going on?
Varlith asked as the Vinghund hovered just over him.
What's the Arkin doing out here?
She thinks she knows a way to destroy the cloaking spell, I explained to him. But she's worried there might be an aftershock, so I need you guys to step back.
Is there anything we can do to help?
Gawain wondered as he gave Fi a sidewards glance. There wasn't any love lost between him and the Arkin who'd once inhabited his mind, and I knew the Fire Mage was still uncomfortable in her presence. Fi thinks it'll just take us and the Arkans. I shook my head. I know there aren't many places to hide, but I would move as far over as you can just in case.
Will do,
the Fire Mage nodded, and then he turned to Varlith.
Shall we proust?
Call out if you need anything,
Varlith insisted to me, and then he and Gawain took off. With those two taken care of, I instructed my monster to take us to the other side to fill the rest of the team in. Just as Gawain and Varlith had, the other half of the squad seemed wary of Fi's presence.
Griff, what's up?
Brayden prompted me when I landed the Vinghund on the ground. Almasi had risen from his spot on the ground, and the Earth Mage wore a look of disappointment, while Mur and Orin had their eyes fixated on Fi. I repeated the plan back to them and instructed them to step away.
I can try to make a natural earth shield,
Almasi suggested.
Varlith and Gawain can join us so we'll all be in one place.
Sounds perfect to me,
I agreed.
Do what you think you can. I have no idea how this magic works, and I don't need anyone to get caught up in the crossfire.
Almasi jumped right into it, and as he began to create a shelter for my teammates, I considered the best course of action for myself. If I was going to help Fi, I would need extra mobility. So I reached through the bond and used my magic to borrow my Vinghund's wings. They were large and impressively strong, and adrenaline coursed through me as they sprouted out from my back. Now that I was equipped with wings and bullet bass armor, I felt like a warrior angel myself. After I gave the group a brief wave, I pumped my wings and took off into the air to rejoin Fi. And as I ascended above the field, I reached back into my mind and unlocked the wards that kept the other goddesses bound.
I need all hands on deck, I instructed them. Fi and I are going to break this cloaking enchantment, and we need some magical assistance.
Yes, master.
The remaining Arkans all replied in unison, and the chorus of gorgeous voices sent a chill down my spine. I rejoined Fi high above the field, and the Arkans' red eyes glittered with excitement.
The wings suit you,
she complimented me as I hovered beside her.
It's a sexy look on you, my master.
Thanks, I said, and I slightly breezed over the compliment. So, what do we do now? Blast the veil?
Essentially,
Fi replied in a vague tone.
I'm going to try to overpower the shield. I'm hoping that if I can push enough of our magic through it, it'll shatter.
Fair enough, Logic, I assessed. If anyone was going to know what to do, it would be Fi. So, I was ready to try whatever she suggested.
Are you prepared, Master?
The white-haired goddess asked me. I'm ready, I nodded. I wasn't sure what we were about to do, or if it was even going to work, but we had to do anything we could do to lift this spell.
Good,
the white-winged Arkan nodded back, and then she inclined her chin upwards.
Now, I'm fairly certain the top of the veil is just a little above us. I'll locate the center, and once I give you the signal, I want you to concentrate on the veil dissolving. The others as well.
That's it? Just concentration? I clarified as my eyebrows creased together.
That's all,
Fi confirmed.
I'll do the rest.
We flew up a few feet higher, and Fi suddenly got an excited expression before she soared over to a certain spot and then held her hands out in front of her.
This is it,
she declared.
Hold your hands next to mine.
I joined her at the spot, and sure enough, I sensed a light hum, and then noticed a similar silver shimmer. I held my hands next to the Arkans, and then reached into my mind. Everyone do as Fi says, I instructed the other goddesses. When she gives us the word, I want you to channel your magic through my hands and help us destroy the spell.
Yes, master,
the Arkans replied again.
Ready when you are,
Fi announced, and the goddess's red eyes were ablaze as she focused on the spot. I noticed a white glow snake out from her palms, and it seemed to grow brighter with every second. I took a deep breath. Showtime. I focused my mana and my attention on the same spot. I pictured a physical veil, and then imagined it shattering all around us, only to reveal an elaborate black marble palace beneath us. I imagined the grounds, the flowers, the fountain in the front. Every detail I could recall from my week in the Shadowscape. As I concentrated my magic, a similar glow appeared around my hands. Holy shit. Was it working? I forced myself to refocus, and as I did, the slight shimmer I'd glimpsed moments ago began to intensify. Fi's eyes were closed now, and her eyebrows creased together as the glow around her hands magnified. She was an impressive sight to behold, and her concentration only made me work harder.
Push, Griff!
The white-winged Arkan instructed me.
We're getting close. We just need a surge to break through it.
I took another breath and sensed the other goddesses stir within me.
Take our magic,
Sarah spoke up.
Yes, master. Our magic is yours,
Mira Lee chimed in. My body was suddenly overwhelmed with adrenaline, and the magic from my hands glowed almost as bright as the sun as the goddesses lent me their own power. The magic was fucking intense as it surged through me, and I felt like I was conducting electricity. The force of it made my head ache, so I closed my eyes and concentrated on the visualization. We needed this veil to dissolve. We needed to destroy Karth's magic. I yelled through gritted teeth as my hands burned from the swell of magic, and suddenly a burst flew through me, and I cried out as I was consumed in an intense inferno of tingling and burning. My entire body vibrated as the magic coursed through my veins, but after a moment or two, the feeling vanished entirely.
It had only been a second or two, but the agony made it feel longer. As I waited for my heart rate to quiet down, I opened my eyes tentatively, and when I did, I was greeted by a familiar sight. The Black Marble Palace. The Arkans and I had done it. The veil was destroyed, and the field was once again decorated with the black-bricked trails and strange bursts of flowers. I never thought I'd be so grateful to see Karth's palace again after my week here as a prisoner, but as I noted the towering spires, a wave of relief flooded through me. However, my excitement didn't last long, because not too far off in the distance, I spotted something else that made my stomach plummet. Mega-sized monsters. An entire herd of them. Fuck, I muttered.